Hello, my name is Craig Faust with Life Care Counseling, and you are listening to St. Louis Therapist Spotlight. And I am just going to meet with another fellow therapist that I know does good work and talk with them a little bit about their practice and their specialties. So if it's something that you feel like may be a good fit for you or someone that you know, then you may be able to get in contact with them. So without any further delay, here we go. Hello, my name is Craig, and I am here with Genevieve. Genevieve, can you tell everybody hi?
Hi, I'm Genevieve. I'm a licensed professional counselor in Webster Groves.
So, Genevieve, I know that I just want to tell you, so I'm sitting here in your office, and I'm looking around, and you have the largest assortment of different toys, and it's very colorful. It's very warm and welcoming, so I just wanted to let you know that.
Thank you. That feels good to hear.
But one of the things that I also love, too, is, and I think I told you this even before we started recording, was that I can tell that you work with kids just walking in here. So normally I ask people what their specialty is, so is kids something that you work with a lot?
Yeah, I've been working with kids for a long time, like 9 years. Yeah, I'd say it's my specialty.
Okay.
I've been collecting those little toys for a while. It's fun to keep adding
collecting. The ones over here on
your shelf. Yeah, the little guys.
Okay. Well, can you tell me, so if I'm someone listening to this and I'm wondering if my kid would be a good fit for you, give me an idea of what are some of the types of people that you serve or what's sometimes the work that you do with some of these children that you're seeing?
Yeah, so usually the kids I work with, they've maybe had some sort of traumatic event in their life, whether it be something really big and scary or some kind of life change they're having trouble adjusting to. So maybe they've had some, you know, anxiety symptoms or trauma symptoms. Those are usually the kinds of kids I work with.
Okay.
Yeah.
So give me an idea. If I'm a parent and maybe I don't even know that my child has suffered some type of trauma, or maybe I'm not even sure if they're experiencing anxiety, what are some things that I might see that would kind of tip me off that, like, oh man, this is something that they're experiencing, this is something that they're going through?
Yeah. So if we're talking about a really little kid, anxiety for them can look like even like anger outbursts, or maybe they suddenly don't want to leave their parents' side and they used to be pretty well adjusted and go here and there and be kind of okay.
Like hugging onto their leg all the time.
Yeah, maybe they're hugging onto your leg and begging you, oh, I don't want to go. Maybe they're kind of having more meltdowns than they used to. Maybe they were seemingly mild-mannered for a while and they've got a change in kind of their behaviors and they have a trouble like regulating now. That could be a sign that they've developed some anxiety or they've experienced a traumatic event.
Okay.
Yeah.
So they might be, it sounds like you're saying that they're acting a lot different than they may have before.
Yeah, that could
and
be it.
The behavior that they're exhibiting now, not only is it different, but like you said, like the explosiveness, the meltdowns.
It could be, yeah. Or maybe they could even retreat and kind of go the opposite way. Maybe they've become a little like avoidant or withdrawn.
Okay, so maybe where they want to stay in their room, or if they're by you, they're not talking, they don't make eye contact with people or anything.
Yeah.
That would kind of tip you off as a parent that something's going on with my child
that maybe
isn't always normal.
That could tip you off, yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So give me an idea of what kind of age range do you work with whenever you take kids?
So I would start with a 3-year-old or a 4-year-old. They can come in pretty young, but I work all the way up through, adolescence, and I enjoy working with adults too.
So I know the age ranges you just listed there. I'm just assuming that whenever a kid comes in here, it's a little bit different for you whenever you're working with a kid as opposed to a teen or an adolescent as opposed to an adult. So give me an idea of where some of those differences take place, or how that might look different if I'm coming in here and if I'm a kid versus a teen or versus an adult.
Yeah. So a lot of times if it's a little kid I'm working with, we'll probably end up on the rug. Kids kind of like to be on the floor and playing.
It's a very comfortable looking rug, by the way.
Thanks. Most people agree with that. Yeah, so the kids kind of like to get down. That's why a lot of the toys are kind of on the lower shelves. So we'll probably be on the floor playing, whether it be with the sand tray or some other thing of their choice. And I'm kind of incorporating a variety of play therapy and EMDR techniques with them.
Okay. Now give me an idea of what this might look like for a teen.
For a teen, they tend to sit on the couch, you know, and want to kind of just talk for the most part. Or maybe they want to do some art therapy type stuff at the table. If they're the kind of teen that's really an open book and they really want to talk quite a bit, I don't need as much. They just kind of need me to listen and be there. Mm-hmm. If they're a little bit quieter or maybe just kind of anxious about being here, maybe they need some kind of thing between me and them to help them feel comfortable. So maybe
like
we're
something to do while they're talking.
Yeah, exactly.
That really helps. I think that what you said right there with that anxiousness is such a key component,
mm-hmm.
is that whenever people are anxious and they're given something to do, it really helps them start to open up and starts to talk.
Yeah, I've definitely found that.
So I kind of wonder, is it different for you with adults then? Do some of the adults that you see, are they usually pretty easy to come in here and talk with? Or do you ever have to incorporate anything like that where you're giving them something to do?
Yeah, usually the adults I've been working with, they, you know, make a big sacrifice to come here. They somehow fit it into their day and fit it into their financial budget. And they work pretty hard while they're here. You know, it's not so much as a kid where it's maybe their parents' idea that they be here. So yeah, they don't necessarily need me to have a bunch of ideas for what we should do that day. They're kind of coming in with their stuff.
Yeah.
But yeah, sometimes adults like to fidget with stuff while they talk to me.
Yeah. It's like the adults already have the game plan. I think that you said it wonderfully right there, is that a lot of times kids may come in here, they don't always know what it is to talk about.
Mm-hmm.
They may not even have the language yet for it, or
sure.
the capability of being able to express it. Mm-hmm. So for you, you're trying to give them other tools and other ways to express that.
Yeah.
So give me an idea of whenever you're working with a kid, some of the things that you may see them do in here, whether or not it's with art or with some of these toys, that kind of give you a clue as to what's going on.
Sure. So they might kind of play out some scenarios that kind of give me some insight into what's going on outside of the room. You know, for example, if their parents are divorced and they're struggling with that, but they don't have the language yet to say, "Mom and Dad, I really wish you were still together," or "Why can't Mom and Dad still be together anymore?" They may create a world in the sand tray where Mom and Dad are holding hands and it's just the three of them again. Or they may play out some sort of scenario where they feel really safe and secure because that's the way they want to feel. And so that kind of gives me some insight into what's going on. The play is like their language.
Yeah, I like the way that you said that. I was actually, whenever you said that, it was, for me, it's like you are an interpreter. You're going into a foreign land and you're trying to translate this,
mm-hmm.
Whatever's going on, and interpret that back.
Yeah.
Maybe even to the parents, or like just like for your own understanding what's
yeah.
going on with
yeah.
them. And you're using play as that medium.
Yep.
I feel like that a lot of times, whenever people hear the idea of play therapy, they're thinking, oh, like, oh, like you're just playing with my kid, rather than understanding the depth of understanding that comes from us just seeing some of the scenarios that some of these kids are creating.
Exactly.
And mm-hmm. you getting to witness that and to
yeah.
help them explore that in that manner.
Mm-hmm. It's pretty special. They have the outlet, you know, with no judgment and no restrictions, hardly, you know, to just communicate how they're feeling, what they're thinking, what they wish things could be like, or what they're afraid might happen.
Mm-hmm. So I kind of wonder, can you give me some of the idea of, I have an idea of some of the populations that you work with, some of the work that you do, can you give me an idea of some of the training that you have, or kind of what are maybe areas of specialty that you might say that you have, mm-hmm. Or that you work with, or that you really enjoy, whenever, maybe that sounds weird saying that, right? Whenever someone comes in and they're having these different symptoms or these different problems, you're like, this is something I can definitely like be able to help you with. So give me an idea of some of the specialties that you might have.
Yeah, I would say, I kind of lit up when you said enjoy, because I know what you're talking about. I have clients come in with cases or scenarios, you know, that I just feel really good about working with, and it's a good fit for me. So usually that I would say is anxiety. And I would say middle school age, and also this kind of age of young adults, where you've just finished high school or college, and you're kind of like, oh, now what? I have this new chapter I'm supposed to start, but I don't really know how to navigate it, or what's expected of me in the world, or where to go next.
Yeah, that's a huge transition.
Those are a couple of populations that I really like working with. And with that approach, I really like using a combination of EMDR and CBT.
Okay. So I kind of want to, like, if I am someone that's listening to this, I don't know what EMDR or CBT mm-hmm. is. Can you give me a little bit of idea of what those forms of therapy are?
Yeah. So CBT has been around a long time. Mm-hmm. It's cognitive behavior therapy. It's kind of this idea that what we think about, you know, affects how we feel and what we do. And if we kind of take a look at those thoughts, we can try to see what about this thought is worth having, or is true and valid. Those are the thoughts that can probably help me feel a little bit better, rather than the thoughts that, oh, actually that's not true, or that's an exaggeration, or, you know, I'm causing myself to feel maybe a lot worse about this thing than I should.
I think that this is the way that I like thinking of cognitive behavioral therapy sometimes is cognitive behavioral therapy, by the way, is the gold standard in which a lot of other therapies are measured for effectiveness.
Sure.
And cognitive behavioral therapy, I feel like whenever we walk through life, things stick to us and we can't shake them off. And what cognitive behavioral therapy, or even other types of therapy too, help us do is to make it so that those things don't stick as often, or it's a little bit easier to shake off by taking that and like kind of looking at that piece, deciding if that whatever it is with that piece, that thought, is true, whether or not it's something that like how much weight that it has almost, or how much ability it has to stick with us, like the difference between observation and like having it actually be a part of us.
Oh, I like the way you said that. Yeah.
I always like the idea of like thoughts and feelings, they can be sticky.
Mm-hmm. And that's a good way of explaining it.
Especially when we don't like them. Uh-huh. So the cognitive behavioral therapy, is that something that you use with all ages of the clients that you work with, or is that, are there certain clients that come in that you're like, all right, they would be a good candidate for this?
I'd say there's pieces of it that I certainly use with most everyone. Certainly I'm not going to go into too much depth with a really tiny kid about the thought they're having and why it may or may not be worth, may or may not be helpful, you know? But for some kids, I can tell that, hey, this is going to be a really good approach. And maybe that's because, no matter what I do, they're just not coming around to some of my other approaches. Mm-hmm. And maybe they're really, heavy thinkers. I'm trying to find the right way to say that. You know, maybe they're pretty in their head. Mm-hmm. And they have this pattern that's really clear to me of overthinking, or making, in CBT language, lots of thinking mistakes.
Yeah, I think that goes right along with what you're saying with the anxiety clients that sure. you work with. They're doing a lot of thinking, and they're had a lot. It's average person is having quite a few thoughts, but then you throw in some anxiety and it gets exponentially multiplied.
Yeah.
And it sounds like what you're saying is that for you, whenever someone comes in and they're having that overwhelming flow of thoughts, then that kind of lets you know that, all right, CBT may be something.
We can use some of those components. Yep.
I think the other one that you said was EMDR. Mm-hmm. Is that correct? Can you tell me a little bit about EMDR?
I can. So that one stands for eye movement desensitization and reprocessing. Okay. It is a mouthful, so we can continue to call it EMDR. So sometimes we have these unprocessed memories. So memories where when we think about it, it still feels as yucky or difficult or distressing as it did when it first happened. EMDR helps us kind of reprocess those things and help it feel less bad, or maybe even not bad at all.
Okay. I like the way that you explain that sometimes it's these things that are unprocessed, so maybe they're in the background. Mm-hmm. So you may not even always be aware of them. And for you, whenever you do EMDR, it's helping bring light to some of those areas. And whenever it's bringing light to them, that kind of cuts down on the intensity that may be happening.
Yeah.
Which I think that's a tricky thing, because like there's an intensity there, but you may not always even be like aware of why.
Yes. Yes. And sometimes people might avoid at all costs thinking about the thing that brings them a lot of distress. And they work really hard to try not to think about it. But the stuff still comes up because we can't delete it from our memory.
Yeah.
And so I ask him to do kind of that difficult, scary thing of, let's think about this thing on purpose. And let's get it refiled somehow in our brain to where it doesn't feel so bad and scary anymore.
Yeah, I think the one of the ways that I like to think about it is it's this huge emotional chunk of information that's just sitting there floating around, and every time it impacts your consciousness, it's all hands on deck, it's red alert, it's like I can't hardly do anything with it. And it sounds like what you're saying is EMDR is a way of reducing that intensity, so whenever it impacts you, it's not as big of a chunk that's hitting you anymore.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, it's a lot smaller chunk, and all of a sudden, maybe the chunk's not there anymore.
Yeah.
And you're not just going throughout your daily life waiting for this thing to show up again.
Right.
Waiting for this thing to kind of take over again.
Mm-hmm.
So on a real practical level, I know that I know as a clinician, there's a couple different ways that you can do EMDR.
Yep.
I know there's like a light bar. There's like some type. People use their fingers. Sometimes mm-hmm. people use tappers. So give me an idea if I'm walking in here and I want to do EMDR, what method do you use?
Yeah. So I'd say primarily my clients choose the tappers. Mm-hmm. So they're these little gadgets. They hold one little paddle in each hand, typically is where they hold them. And when I turn it on, they buzz back and forth from hand to hand, just like your phone would when it's on vibrate.
Mm-hmm.
For some people, they do prefer the eye movement method, and so they will follow my fingers as I move them back and forth. With little kids, EMDR looks pretty different. They might put those buzzers in their shoes or in their pockets, or I may tap them back and forth on their shoulders with a toy or with my hand if I have their permission.
Mm-hmm.
Some sort of bilateral stimulation is what that is.
So give me an idea what's bilateral stimulation.
That's a big part of the EMDR. That's when we're accessing our left brain and our right brain back and forth. We're stimulating our body back and forth to help us see things more cohesively and reprocess or kind of problem solve.
Yeah, I think that the bilateral stimulation is the thing that helps us reprocess in a lot of ways. Like whenever we have a traumatic experience, we can get stuck on one side of our brain, and it's not really communicating as effectively. Mm-hmm. And whenever you do the bilateral, since I think that most people that I know that do EMDR actually use the tappers. Mm-hmm. I think that's it's a lot better than the light bar, in my opinion. Because I feel like
it's so invasive.
Yeah,
it's a pretty big device. It takes a minute to get it all set up.
Well, I don't like feeling like I'm at the eye doctor. I love my eye doctor and everything because I have to see him a lot.
Shout out to your eye doctor.
Yeah, but I think that most people, they use tappers, and I think that it's easiest for most people to use the tappers. And like you said, it kind of like forces that bilateral stimulation. So I think the most incredible thing is you don't always even have to do very much with it. As a client coming in here, because the bilateral stimulation is automatically happening as long as you're just holding it.
Yep. And I tell people, you're already doing this. Every night when you sleep, you go into this rapid eye movement sleep cycle. Your eyes move back and forth in your head. You're getting that bilateral stimulation. The things you learned and took in that day, they're getting filed away and organized, and your brain's making sense of everything. So when I mimic that process with them here in the counseling room while they're awake, it triggers that same process in the brain to kind of file things away, make sense of things, feel better about things.
Yeah. Like make things make sense. I like that. Mm-hmm. Make sense of things, because I feel like, especially in the world that we have now, especially if you're I would say especially if you're a kid, but I know even as an adult I'm like that sometimes too. It's like, why can't this just make sense?
Yeah.
And this is something that really helps bring light to some of those things to help make more sense of things that are going on.
Mm-hmm.
Now I kind of wonder, like, for whenever you do EMDR, it sounds like you said it's different for little kids. That's the first time that I had ever talked to anybody about that. I didn't realize that.
Oh, okay.
So for you, you said you put it in their shoes or in their pockets or anything, or with their permission, you might tap on their shoulders or anything like that.
Yep.
I guess it probably might be hard for a kid to sit there and just, you know, hold those
right
in their hands or anything like that. I had never really even considered that.
Yeah, so they don't have to sit still for an EMDR session. They can still play. They can still bounce around the room and fidget and do their kid thing while they're still getting the bilateral stimulation. Yeah.
I tell you what, that's incredible, actually, to even hear about.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
Kind of wondering, like, even as we're at this space right now, do you feel like there is any other type of specialty or any other type of training that you had that, like, you maybe incorporate sometime? I know that we talked mostly about, like, the play therapy, the cognitive behavioral therapy, and the EMDR. Are there any other techniques or anything that you might use with your clients, or is there any other type of work that you do? I think you said mostly like anxiety and trauma.
Yeah.
Give me an idea. Is there any other type of population that you might serve, or is that really for you where you focus most of your efforts on?
I say that's probably the majority. But I also see kids with behavioral problems. Mm-hmm. I can use parent-child interactive therapy with them, PCIT. I do family therapy. I'll see people with OCD, people with depression, bipolar disorder. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So would you say that, like we're talking about, like, for your specialty it might be anxiety or trauma, but those are also other populations that you said that you can work with too.
Mm-hmm.
Now whenever you're doing family therapy, is that even with, like, really young kids where they might be in here as well?
Yep.
Okay. I kind of wonder, like, how do you keep a kid in their seat while the family therapy is going on? Or is it kind of like,
so
they're in here and we're talking, we kind of move with them or anything like that?
Yeah. I mean, I guess it really depends on the kid. Typically, if I'm doing family therapy, I've already got a good relationship with that kid. So they started with me individually. They know me. They know my room. They know what to expect. Yeah. And maybe they're used to the format of the session. So typically if I'm doing, individual therapy with a kid, I include the parent or parents at the beginning and or the end of each session. So they're already used to having their parents in here.
Okay. So it isn't that big of a shift for them.
It's like, so it's kind of a natural shift if then the family is included in the whole thing. Mm-hmm. If the kid really just can't participate, there's a variety of things that maybe needs to happen. But the first thing I think of is, okay, where do I meet this kid where he is? Maybe he can't sit still because we're expecting too much of him, or he's very anxious. What does he need to feel a little more secure so that he can be engaged, whether it be, a stuffed animal on his lap or a fidget, or, maybe he wants to sit on the floor because he can move around a little bit easier instead of on a chair or something. So we just kind of accommodate.
All right. I kind of wonder, can you just speak to me a little bit about what made you get into the counseling profession? And I know that really a lot of times whenever I talk to counselors or therapists there, and you don't have to go like as in depth as like this happened in my life and like I had to do this, but what is it that kind of really put you on course for this field, especially with working with the type of clients that you do?
So I get asked that question a lot by the kids I work with. Mm-hmm. Why did you want to do this when you grew up? My best answer to that is probably because I needed a counselor when I was a kid. Is kind of what I think. I remember knowing in high school that this is what I wanted to be. I really don't know why I got that idea. So just looking back on kid me, I'm thinking that's probably why. And I explored other possible options as I grew up. But then I came back to this, and I'm really glad I did.
Okay. That's wonderful to hear. I think that, I think it's so hard, even knowing what you want to do that young, and to hear that you did, and you veer away from it, and, you end up coming back to it.
Yeah.
Right. And, I'm wondering if you can kind of give me an idea of, what type of, someone's walking in the room, what type of lens do you have where you're looking to try to understand what's going on with them and their whole worldview and their whole experience?
Mm-hmm. My lens is like an attachment-based lens and like a trauma-focused lens. So I'm kind of looking at things from this perspective of, did they have everything they needed as a baby and as they grew up? Were they validated and secure? And if I learned that wasn't the case in even a tiny way, like they had to spend some time in the hospital as a baby, or as a bigger way, like an attachment figure abused them or, died when they were younger. That kind of tells me like, okay, this could give me some insight into what's going on with them today. And this applies to adults I work with and kids I work with.
So like you're able to trace back this thing that's going on right now could be influenced by some of these experiences that they've had before. And it's kind of giving fuel to what's happening right now.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, when the brain is developing, if some of those basic needs aren't being met, like security and attachment and food and water and stuff, that kind of changes the way their brain ends up developing and changes the way they see the world and they interact.
Yeah. I think that must mean that for you, whenever you're first meeting with someone, when you're really kind of doing assessment on what's going on, like part of you is really honing in, like, all right, what's happened in your history? What are some experiences that you've had? What was it like for you growing up?
Yeah. And even what do you know about your mom's pregnancy? Yeah. So even going all the way back
to
that.
Okay. So I feel like through our conversation, I have a really good idea of some of the people that you really serve. Sounds like you're saying that a lot of times you will serve kids, teens, and adults in the way that you serve them with kids, since they may not have the language or the ability to express themselves. You'll use play therapy, and even at times you may use EMDR with them. Mm-hmm. EMDR seems to be something that you can consistently use throughout whatever age range if you deem that it's necessary.
Yeah.
The people that come to see you, they may be experiencing some anxiety, or they may have had some trauma that's really been affecting them. And you also have some other populations that you work with in conjunction with this, or maybe even kids that you're already seeing that have anxiety, like they have OCD, that's something that you can help with too, or if they need some type of family therapy, or they have depression. Like, those are all areas that you're comfortable working in with as well. So if someone's listening to this and they're like, hey, I really like the way that she sounds. She sounds like she knows what she's doing. I feel like I'd be comfortable enough to make an appointment. Give me an idea. Someone makes a call to you. What does the process look like for that? What does it look like for them wanting to get in contact with you and just getting signed up, start seeing you?
Yeah. So if someone gives me a call and they want to come in and start counseling, I kind of invite them to ask any questions they have for me at the time. I also just kind of get like a brief idea of why they're seeking counseling for themselves or their child. I ask if they plan to use any insurance to help cover the cost. And I schedule something within the next week or two, usually.
Okay. I just want to let people know that maybe listening to this too, that your office is pretty close to 44 and Elm, I think, is where I got off.
Mm-hmm.
It's right off Big Bend. It's pretty close to the highway as far as the convenience of getting here. The room that I'm sitting in right now, like I was kind of describing it earlier, it looks really warm. You have a nice big window there that's letting in light. It's very pleasant. I feel like sometimes you go into therapy offices and they're really dark and dim, and it just makes you want to fall asleep. So it's a very big difference with that. It's been great talking with you and learning more about your practice.
Thanks for coming. It's been a pleasure for me too.
So I'm going to have, if anybody wants to get in contact with you, I'll have a link to your website, and then they can get started. It was great talking with you. I'm glad that you invited me here, and I look forward to future conversations we may have.
I do too. Thanks, Craig.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of St. Louis Therapist Spotlight. The music that you're listening to is called Lobby Time by Kevin McLeod, and that is licensed under Creative Commons. And you can find more great tunes like this at creativecommons.org.